100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, 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 Digital Sister back. How's everybody? Glad that you're tuning in. You know, I have to say, when I posted my first podcast on October 19th, it took me a few weeks to get a few downloads. But 5 months later, with episode Digital 10, I was able to get a good number of downcasts within a week. So that's letting me know that Digital Sister is catching on and that people are tuning in to hear my personal reflections about, you know, what's going on today in the cultural landscape. So I really appreciate you tuning in and checking out Digital Sister. There's just so many things to talk about. But first I want to weigh in on the immigration issue that everybody has been talking about over the weekend, in the papers, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it sort of speaks of what I mentioned in some previous podcasts, that for the most part, the powers that be kind of want it both ways, because in that sense, there's a great fear of the browning of America. And when you turned into the TV over the weekend and you looked at cities like Los Angeles, where some 500,000 people took to the streets, 50,000 in Denver, 20,000 in Phoenix, 4,000 in Charlotte, and even 3,000 people in Columbus, Ohio, protesting possible laws that they will be voting on starting today. House Judiciary Chairman F. James Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin wrote a bill back in December, which basically would make illegal immigration a felony and would toughen penalties on those who employ or assist illegal immigrants, and it would also extend a fence along the border. To me, it's such an extreme reaction, because you have to look at how are you going to criminalize people that are helping people come over. How are you going to do that? It will take so many more Border Patrol policemen to actually do the kind of work that they need to talk about. So I think you have to look at what the bill is really about. It's kind of extreme, and in many ways it speaks to, as I said before, the fear of the browning of America. Immigrants feel that they built the country, and yes, they have, because we've had immigrants since this country began, with the very first immigrants being slaves. And yes, slaves who've been here 450 years, we've been here 450 years, built the country too. So we have to look at that. It's just very interesting to me that despite all of the chaos that's going on with the war of terror, the issues going on with Katrina, the lack of cleanup, the lack of help, the fact that they're going on with the elections, you know, is very frightening to me. But this speaks to the whole issue of what's going on. And with this whole immigration thing, it almost seems as though this came up at a time to deflect from some of the other big issues that are happening. So I don't know how this is going to be resolved, because on one hand, we have a lot of corporate America who actually, you know, hire many of the illegal immigrants because it's cheap labor. And then you have many companies that are agricultural businesses who depend quite a bit on immigrant labor to harvest the produce. So that's an issue. And I do understand that in many ways it's a hardship on, you know, the hospitals that are really treating a lot of the immigrants and things like that. But I think there has to be a better way, and there has to be a better solution. And it would almost behoove Congress and to some degree the Senate to, I think, kind of step back for a moment and really look at this issue. Because on one hand, as we know, many of the corporate owners are Republican. You know, they own the companies. They're looking for cheap labor. So that's a market pool that they depend on. But then you have the Republican Party, who's also courting after the Latino vote. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword, because on one hand, you're courting that vote, but you have members of your own party, the Republican Party, writing legislation, which for the most part is making immigration a felony, and for those who assist, you know, felonious in the actions. So it's a very touchy subject, and I don't think that they should, I mean, I know they're going to vote on it, but in my opinion, I don't think they should rush into tampering with an immigration law that they haven't really touched in about 10 years. And to do it when rational minds prevail, not in this atmosphere, I hate to say it, but this atmosphere of xenophobia, this atmosphere of fear of terrorists and anybody who, you know, is brown. If cooler heads could prevail and there would be more discussion, I think perhaps there could be a better solution than this force of might to quickly criminalize immigrants and those who help them. Lou Dobbs, who's a commentator on CNN, is very very knowledgeable about this. And I watched him last night on CNN, and basically, and I kind of agree with him, he's saying that this whole push to change the immigration law is basically a sham, and it's a sham for the Republican Party, and it's a sham for many of the people of America. And so I just hope that they will take a moment and not rush into creating a situation which will have some very long-term ramifications that, and in social work, what we call unintended consequences that I don't think people have really thought about. And on that note, I just want to kind of shift countries and kind of speak about, again, what's going on in Paris and what's going on in France. I don't think any of us would have ever thought that we would see the day where Paris and France are burning, as I said in some of my other previous podcasts. And in this fear, and in this atmosphere of fear, where, again, they're also creating laws that are xenophobic in many ways to protect the French workers. I mean, you have to look at that. And I wonder at some point, how long will it be before the new French law, which, you know, listen to this, is that employers have the right to fire workers under age 26 during a 2-year trial period, which means they don't really have to give a reason. If they decide they don't want this 26-year-old there, they're gone. And so what happens is you're really toying with a younger population who is protesting because they're not having a chance to move into society. And here you're about to create a law which will take effect next month that is going to essentially let employers discriminate against young workers and fire them so that they never ever have a chance to have longevity and to really benefit from the social safety net that employment has within that country. To me, it speaks of they're doing everything they can to protect the older, and let's say it, probably traditional French worker. And you see the protests that are going on there. It hasn't stopped since this came into the forefront last week. And the sad part is that the politicians there are very adamant, and they're not willing to be flexible. But you have to wonder, is that really the only solution to the employment problem, that you're going to discriminate the young workers who you're going to need because those older workers are going to retire, they're going to, die, whatever. And you're going to need a pool of young workers who know what to do and can fill those positions. But if you set up a law that hinders that, I think there are going to be all kinds of unintended consequences that Paris is just beginning to grapple with. And who's to say, flipping back to the United States, who's to say that some variation of that law could not come and be implemented here? I mean, we're already seeing the reduction of pensions for older workers. You know, you're having to pay more of your medical costs because the companies who are making so much money and their CEOs in the United States are making so much money, but yet they don't want to invest in those things that keep workers satisfied and happy. And I read a statistic, and I heard in the radio that many of the CEOs are enjoying 11 to 12, 13, 14% pay raises, which are already generally in the millions along with stock options. And the average worker, middle class worker, is lucky if they get a 3% wage. And see, at some point, it's my feeling that, the United States may have a wake-up call, much like we're seeing with this whole immigration issue. Who's to say that that kind of stirring up could not happen here? And you see, when so many of the news people were looking at the news, they're like freaking out because you're seeing, half a million brown people taken to the streets protesting. If they went on a strike, it would shut down many industries and cause all kinds of bad will. So I think we as a nation are going to have to start looking at that, because some things that are being done in other countries to provide a response to the browning of their countries and the discord amongst their young workers, I mean, that could happen anywhere. It could happen here. So we have to be vigilant and watch out for that. Another thing I wanted to talk about is, and I have to get a copy of myself, but the Covenant for Black America that was produced and kind of spearheaded by Tavis Smiley. It seems to be an interesting concept, and from what I've read from articles, as I said before, I have to get my own copy. But what I'm hoping is, even though there's a litany of the things that are problematic in the African American community, which we all know, which we've all read about, I'm hoping, just as Dwayne Wickham says, I hope that with the number of people getting this book and reading this book, that something will happen within the community that will help people take action and make some changes and to really do something with this book beyond just talking about it on the radio and Tavis going on this, 8-city tour to get everybody revved up. But, what's going to happen with this book? Will people take action? Will there be ways for people to take action? With the second A Million More march that happened just recently over the summer, there was a great call to action and lots of people came out. But unfortunately, I, as well as many other people, really haven't heard too much else as the outcome from that. When you are a powerful leader and you're able to bring masses of people together, that is the time to do something powerful and empowering and to have something in place where people can leave from that gathering and move forward. So I'm hoping that that's what's going to happen with the Covenant of Black America, that yes, there's great dialogue. Yes, it's very exciting that Third World Press is a black publisher who for the first time has a book on the New York Times best-selling list. But I hope that more can come of it and that it will filter into our communities and people will take action and do the work that they need to heal themselves and to heal the community. Because as we see, there's no lack of ideas. There's no lack of people stirring up others for a movement of some kind. But in this day and age, I think we have to have not only just the movement to get people revved up and ready to take action, but there has to be something that they can do after the moment, after, you know, the lights and the cameras are out. What are you going to do individually? What is it that I can do? And I hope that as the discussion continues with the Covenant of Black America, that there will be options in place, or that there will be something that people can actually do to take the necessary steps to take action and move beyond the excitement of the publicity and move beyond the excitement of the discussion. But really, just to take action and do something with it. So on that note, I think I will wrap up and I will find something interesting for us to talk about when I come back to you in a couple of days. And again, I want to thank you for listening and tuning in and subscribing and passing the word around, because it's very important that this form of podcasting exists, and it's very important that we hear, I think, the opinions of other people that we don't always get to see on the television. So again, thank you for tuning in, and I will be back to you in a couple of days, and Digital Sister will provide additional reflections. Have a great week, and I will be talking to you soon.